SEC committee meetings. This morning we will have the pleasure of hearing from the governor and then proceed through the budgets as presented for this supplemental budget. And with that, I think we need to call the roll. And so whoever's calling that, is that Vicky or is that Vicky, would you call the roll, please, or some, or Don?
Representative Burkhart.
He's excused.
Representative Connolly.
Here.
Representative Greer.
Here.
Representative Moniz.
Here.
Representative Nicholas.
Here.
Representative Stubson.
Here.
Senator Burns.
Here.
Senator Hastert.
Excused.
Senator Perkins.
Excused.
Senator Wasserberger.
Here.
Co-Chairman Harshman.
Here.
Chairman Ross.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, for purposes of reimbursement, the incoming House members, Representative Larson, Representative Schwartz.
He's in paper hell.
Representative Summers.
Here.
Representative Walters.
Here.
Representative Wilson.
Labor hell.
Senator Dockstetter.
Here.
Senator Driscoll.
He should be here.
Labor hell also.
Senator Landon.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a quorum.
Thank you. With that, folks, we, of course, as normal, we are streaming live. So be cautious of over-amplifying things as we get going through this thing. But I would like to welcome the governor if he's here. And
thank you.
Welcome, Governor. I know that your time is short. You have a speech to give at 10:15, so we look forward to your remarks. And the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Harshman, members of the JAC, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. And as always, I'm appreciative of this process. As you all know, not every state has this opportunity, and I think this is an important part not just for me and for all of you, but for the public as we think about the budget and how to move forward. I want to take a little bit of time for those members who will no longer be on JAC. We greatly appreciate your service. Of course, this is a group that I work very closely with, and I'm always amazed at the amount of work you all do and how hard and seriously you take the job. So thank you for that. I do want to go through some things in my budget. I know all of you have had a chance to look at it. I'll just share some of my initial thoughts with all of you, and then I look forward to doing my best to answer any questions that you may have. First, as you know, I am going to be giving my State of the State in the upcoming session, and not to preview all of it, but I will say this, you know, that the State of the State, we still remain strong, but we are in challenging times. And when we think about our state and about 70% of our revenue comes from minerals, we are reminded during this time how fortunate we are that those who came before us set up our state with the strength of our energy industry, our ag industry that adds to our economy and our culture and tourism, and the many other smaller industries and businesses that continue to support Wyoming. We're also reminded of those who came before us who had the wisdom to set up the Rainy Day Fund, who had the wisdom to set up the Permanent Fund, and the legislators and governors who came before who fed those funds, because it's more important now than ever that we have those funds available to us. But even in this time, I will point out that with the work that the legislature did last session, with the JAC work, and where I have made cuts, that we're still in pretty good in a pretty good position in terms of the general fund. I would point out that with the 1% severance, with the $36 million that you added from the rainy day fund and the budget reserve account, that after my recommendations, the budget is sound, it is balanced, and we're in pretty good shape as we move forward. We have collectively, with your work, balance the budget, and we've covered all the expenses without additional money coming from the rainy day fund. The question is, where do we go from here? And I will say just as you read the press and I read the press, as you hear from your constituents and I hear from people around the state of Wyoming, that the cuts that you all made during the legislative session were tough cuts. The tough cuts that I worked on in June were tougher yet. And I do not think that the citizens of the state, the agencies, the employees have felt the full effects of the cuts that we collectively have made. And as we are now in this position where budget is still tight, but it is balanced, I know that there will be discussion as to whether or not additional cuts are made from my recommendations. In talking to individual legislators, I know that some are interested in more cuts. I also know that some are interested in reducing some of the cuts that I have made, in other words, adding back in. As we looked at the budget, and I know all of you do when you're looking at what needs to be done, we tried to make decisions as what is the right amount to cut based upon our revenue. How will the cuts affect our economy? For example, the Wyoming Business Council has been cut more than 20%. We try to look at how it will affect our communities, our individual citizens, our employees. And we also try to look at Wyoming's future. We know that we have to react to the time and circumstances we find ourselves in now, a point in time. But we can never lose sight that there is a bigger picture, which is how do we affect tomorrow and how do we affect the next generation? What is the effect on Wyoming's businesses and Wyoming's children in the future? So your cuts were about $67 million. You also cut 82 positions. My cuts were about $249 million and 228 positions. So as you see, combining our budgets, I do not think that we need to cut further. The budget is balanced. We haven't felt the full effect. And in fact, as we look historically to the 2009-2010 biennium, we see that not only are we relatively flat to that budget, but in fact we are reduced both in terms of dollars and in terms of positions. And in a time when we see government, rule of government is always grow, 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 the fact of the matter is Wyoming has reduced in size, both in positions and in dollars. We've also reduced in the amount of rules. As you know, I had an initiative to reduce rules and regulations in our state agencies by 30%. And our agencies responded, as they have responded to the budget cuts. Our agencies did a very good job trying to figure out how, in these difficult times, to make cuts that did the least amount of harm possible. But as we go forward, again, we shouldn't just think about our point in time now. We need to think about the next years that are coming. How do we build a better future for the next generations? How do we, even during this time, continue to advance Wyoming? How do we, in this time, continue to recognize that future legislators will continue to build upon the work you all have done and has been done for many years building Wyoming? So a couple of points, as you'll see in my budget, that I want to highlight. One is we are proud in Wyoming to tout our quality of life. We're proud in Wyoming to talk about our low crime rate and how our justice system is so strong. That includes the public defenders, our prosecutors, and our law enforcement, which I think all do an outstanding job. But just looking at the public defender's office, in order to have a strong justice system, you have to have a strong public defender's office, and the public defender's office is really operating on a very tight budget. Our Department of Corrections, as you look at Department of Corrections, we have frozen a lot of positions at the Department of Corrections. And, of course, the immediate urgency with regard to the Department of Corrections isn't just the personnel, but it's the facilities themselves. We all know about the prison situation in Rawlins, and I applaud the work of the legislative committee that has, over the last interim period, looked at how to address that. I don't know that collectively the legislature and my office has necessarily agreed upon what the right fix is, but the group that worked on it said it is better to repair than replace. The repair cost is about $80 million. If we go along that line, as if we repair and it's $80 million or $70 million or $90 million, we have to decide where that money comes from. I suggested that we look at bonding, and I know some are for or against that, but we do have the highest credit rating available, and if we were a business, certainly we would try to use that credit rating to our advantage. But because no decision has been yet made on how we move forward, and because I continue to be increasingly concerned about the facility, we need to make a contingent appropriation of a little over $19 million. And that request is in the event that there is continuing failure and a catastrophic failure at the pen. We cannot keep the inmates in there. It's not safe for them. It's not safe for the personnel there, the staff, and at which point we'd have to move those prisoners. The Department of Correction has worked hard to try to figure out what the cost of relocating prisoners are, and they estimate it's about $19.2 million. The Department of Health, we, of course, one of our largest agencies and a very well-run agency. I think the estimates on the administrative costs of the Department of Health are about 3%. Because of the amount of cuts that I was required to make and you looked at last legislative session, we, of course, have to look at the Department of Health as it's one of our largest agencies. Just my cuts on the Department of Health were in excess of $90 million in general fund. Your cuts were, I think, they were certainly on top of that. But when we think about cuts at the Department of Health, we have to recognize it's not just $90 million in general fund. It's the $41 million that goes with that in federal funds. Those are not just paper cuts. They will be felt all across the state of Wyoming. And while we've had disagreements with regard to Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, and I understand those disagreements, and it's appropriate that there's a healthy debate on that, I would say that even if we don't expand Medicaid, even if we have repeal and replace with the new presidential administration, we still have to recognize that health care is a priority in Wyoming. And it's a priority not only for the individuals who receive the health care, it's a priority in terms of economic development. If we are to say to an individual town that we can build your streets, we can build your infrastructure, but there's not readily available health care, we will have difficulty keeping the businesses that are there continue to be there, and we'll certainly have difficulty recruiting new businesses. So as part of the Department of Health, we've had very deep cuts. And one of the areas in particular in the Department of Health we're concerned about is Title 25. The legislature has worked on Title 25 for a long time, and it's a difficult issue. It's difficult because we're a rural state. It's a difficult during these times when we are budget constrained. But it's also something that we need to address. And initially, I was going to recommend the $21 million shortfall in my budget because I just thought there was no way around it. As we looked at the last several months, the burn rate on Title 25 has gone down. We're not spending at the same level that we have been. And on top of that, we, of course, want to give the legislature and my office the best chance possible to make corrections on Title 25. And on top of that, we want to continue to ask the Department of Health to look to see if there's any way to avoid the expenditures of that $21 million. So as we did with the prison system, with the 19.2, I've asked for a contingent appropriation of $21 million for the Department of Health to address Title 25 if it's needed. But I want to stress that I view that as a last resort. I want to continue to try to find answers on how we can improve it. We'll continue to look at our burn rate. But if it is needed, I want to have access to that $21 million to address that need. Our community colleges, I think, are second best to none in the country. I'm so proud of our community colleges. They do tremendous work. And you will again see during the interim period we had reductions in our community colleges. Your penny plan at the end of the legislative session had an impact with regard to the veterans tuition program. That program is about $1.2 million each biennium. The penny plan as it was cut this, and in talking to individual members of the legislature and based upon my belief that that program was something that has been promised to those people, we needed to continue to fund that. And so we scratched and we found enough money to fund it for a short time period. But as we head into the session, I would ask again for our consideration of that veterans tuition program. I think it's a good program. I don't say that there isn't room for modification, but it is something that I certainly would like to see continued. As always, we have good discussions on local government, and I hold fast to the belief that now, for the quality of life our citizens enjoy, for economic development, we need to continue to fund local government in a way that makes them as strong as possible. You all appropriated a significant amount of money, $105 million for local government last year. You also authorized, as part of the emergency grant program, money, but we were $5 million short in actually funding it. So I have asked for $5 million for local government to meet their emergency needs. If it's a failing sewer plant, failing water system, we want to make sure that we can respond to the emergency needs of local government, and that is the request for the $5 million. It is at this time when we are budget constrained, as I said, we not only need to think about right now, but in the future. I can't stress strongly enough about the incredible things that has happened at the University of Wyoming over the last decade plus. The legislature, I think, has shown great wisdom in recognizing that when you only have one university, you want to do very well by that university. And the University of Wyoming has been a beneficiary of the generosity of the legislature for many years. And it's not just the generosity. We see the results of that. We see, for example, what they're doing at the High Bay Center, that we are going to lead the world in a niche area in terms of looking at unconventional reservoirs. We see the engineering continuing to progress. We see the library that has been built there. We see so many wonderful things happening at the university. And one of the things that I think is important to continue to move forward on is the science initiative. So I have asked for additional money for the science initiative to the tune of $500,000. I think it's important to keep that going. I think it's important for us to continue our commitment with regard to the university science initiative that you already have committed so much to. We are very fortunate at the university. We have a great president. I think the president has shown great leadership coming in difficult times. And one of the visions that she has, along with all of you, is how do we increase enrollment at the University of Wyoming? They have asked for money for their enrollment program, which I have supported in my budget, which would be new money. The legislature also has seen a fit over the years to have a tribal liaison. This program started under Governor Friedenthal, with the idea that how can we have close relationships with our two tribes? How do we learn more about what their concerns are? How do we, as a state, let them know our concerns and how we can jointly work together? I meet with the tribes. We had, in my early years, the opportunity to have a joint business council meeting with the two tribes. You all are aware that the tribes have been struggling to continue having joint business council meetings, and they only meet separately. And I will meet separately with them here in the not-too-distant future. But as we look at the tribal liaison program, the legislative program, it was funded only enough for the 1 year, and so I have asked in my budget to have it continued to meet the legislative requirements for it to continue for another year. I know that there is supporters and detractors from that program. I would say that with the work that we've seen in the last year, I think the program has gotten better. We have the liaisons come to our cabinet meetings. We have places for them that are available here in Cheyenne for office space. And because the Joint Business Council is not meeting, and because they're struggling with their court system up there, now more than ever may be the time when we do need those liaisons to help us and for us to help them through their difficult time. One of the programs I hope you all have heard about that I've asked for additional money for is the Endow program, Economic Needed Diversity Options of Wyoming. This, I think, is I get asked about why now, and I think this is exactly the time for us to be focusing on how we diversify our economy. And the great available resources that I have in terms of work that has been done prior to my coming in office, I looked at a list of some of the economic advice previous governors had received, including my grandfather in the early 60s, and some of the challenges. And in the early 1960s, the report suggested we suffer because we have an out-migration of our workforce. We suffer because we export our natural resources and we're not adding value to them. On the plus side, it did report that Wyoming at the time had a temperate climate. which I'm not sure whose advice that was. But if we had one then, we certainly have one now. In the mid-60s, economic groups talked about how do we maximize our great outdoors and build upon that economically with sporting goods. It suggested that as we look at our resources, we have sand and glass, sand and opportunity to make glass. And in fact, it got so specific that it suggested that we should, as a state, should be investing to build Barbie dolls. Fortunately, we didn't go down that road. The point of it is that the state for these many decades has been looking on how we diversify our economy. In 1984, suggesting the legislature should create an economic development board. We have done that. 1985, a suggestion to research and develop new CO2 products. And here we are now with legislative support. We are building an integrated test center to do just that. In 1990, and the discussion continues on how we advance air service in the state of Wyoming. These are all things that those who came before us have looked at. And I can't think of a better time for us to focus on how we diversify our economy than now when we see the results of not having a diverse economy. And not having a diverse economy is not limited to the revenue that we in the state see. It's how we react to it. It's how local governments don't know which way we're going to go, whether we're going to go up and down. It's how our agencies don't know what their budget's going to be from year to year. It's how private business doesn't know whether we're going to be funding a road project or not funding a road project. We need diversity because it will add to predictability for the citizens of Wyoming. We need diversity because as we look at losing roughly 60% of our young people out of the state between ages 18 and 25, we will not have the bright future we want if we don't do a better job providing more opportunities for those young people, more opportunities for them to say yes to Wyoming. And we have great industries here, and we have some great small businesses here. But the more we can diversify into areas like technology, the more opportunity we'll give our young people to say yes to staying in Wyoming as possible. So you likewise will see in my budget a request for additional money for Endow. This is not a substitute for the Wyoming Business Council, and I think the Business Council will be playing a huge role in this. I do not want to see the Business Council diminished in this effort. I want to see them bolstered by what we do with Endow. I mentioned health care. Health care will continue to be a big issue for the state of Wyoming. And we will see what the new administration does. I did not ask for Medicaid expansion because of the promise of President-elect Trump that this is going to be repealed and replaced. We don't know what that will look like, but we will be prepared to respond, and I will tell you whatever it is, health care should remain a priority for the state of Wyoming. Next, we get into education. I would say, as we spend our time in the legislative session, that on the general fund side, government operations, that while it's tough, while very tough cuts have been made, that the budget is in fairly good shape. As I said, it's balanced. And, in fact, if we continue using the 1% severance, and our predictions are as we head into next session, we'll be able to fund out of the general fund the budget reserve amount, and also we'll start out about $73 million to the good. So as you have the discussion, should we cut more, I will tell you that I think we're in decent shape now and that we'll be even better shape coming the next session. As we look at education, let me get my notes here. We see that LSO profile suggests that we're going to be $720 million deficit for the 1920 biennium. The projected shortfall over the next 6 years is $1.5 billion. I think the LSO and others would tell you those numbers may be off somewhat. They may be low or they may be high. But I don't think there's any disagreement that we are facing a serious shortfall. I don't think there's any disagreement that we have to act. As you know, last year in my budget message in my State of the State, I suggested that we have an opportunity to put together a task force. I do not see the executive branch by itself or the legislative branch by itself finding the solution to this without greater participation from the public, from our educators. This is something that needs the discussion of the entire state to resolve. Some of the bills that we've been looking at certainly have an opportunity to provide some cuts. But a couple of things I would say on that. If we look at the evidence-based model in and of itself only, we see that if we follow it strictly, that it results in an actual increase of FTEs by 142 positions. At present, a lot of the programs that are in there are funded, have been categorical outside the model and funded at lower levels than the consultant recommends. So as we look at that, as that's an option, just recognize that that would include 142 new positions. We're looking at draft legislation that some of you have worked on. Draft one, option one, is to increase class size. That would result in a savings of $47 million for fiscal year 2018. That modifies class sizes from grades 4 to 12, leaves in place current size of 16 to 1 in grades K through 3. Sixth grade class size is held at 21. Middle high school class size would increase from 21 to 24. This, if it was done, would result in a decrease of 587 funded teacher positions. Draft two option is to increase class size, and that would save $34 million, almost $35 million in fiscal year 18. Again, no change in K-3 class size. Class sizes in grade 4 and 5 would increase from 16 to 21. Class sizes in grades 7 through 12 would be increased from 21 to 22, and estimated impact of 429 fewer teachers. These are tough decisions that all of us are going to have to look at. But, Chairman Harshman, I appreciate your work on trying to put together a task force and recognizing the immediate need to begin making these tough decisions in cooperation not only within the legislature and the executive branch, but around the state on how to best address education. I will say this, that I think as we look at the future, whether it ends in Dow or whatever it may be, we recognize that education is foundational to the success of the individual citizens and foundational to this, the success of the state of Wyoming. I think we should be proud of the fact that our state has funded education at the levels that we have. Because while it is tough now, I do think we've seen great improvements in education. And as we make these difficult decisions, we have to remember that the incoming third grader next year didn't have anything to do with our falling revenue and didn't have anything to do with the decisions that we make. But that third grader, we want to have the opportunity for a great education and a great success in the future. So no easy decisions, but I do think a decision we should make is to act quickly, act with the input of our school districts, the legislature, and the citizens of Wyoming. We look forward to trying to answer as best as we can, Chairman, members of the committee, any questions that you may have. And we look forward to the legislative session. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Governor. Is there any questions for the Governor?
Thank you very much.
Just a moment. Just a moment. That's a quick one of the short timers got questions.
Yeah, I don't want to let the opportunity go by. Governor, I did want to ask you just a little bit more about the Endow program. And in talking about, I know in your budget message you talked about really two components, $1.5 million going to community college for workforce development and then the $1 million. Can you give us two things? First, a little idea of what that $1 million is for. And secondly, I'm assuming this is really a program, and not just an initiative, but in a program that you would anticipate going into the future. And would you anticipate simply a refilling of that, for example, that $1.5 million pot of money as it's used over time? How do you give us a little bit of an idea of how you see this going into the future?
Thank you, Representative Stubson. Absolutely. I failed to provide a full narrative. The Endow is meant to be a 20-year program because I think if I've made a mistake in terms of diversifying our economy and perhaps those who came before me, as we would look at it in a 4-year, 8-year term. I think this has to be a 20-year plan. I think, with objectives obtained every year, but over 20 years, how do we diversify our economy? Because as I read those reports from the 60s and 70s, 80s, the well-meaning people there knew this was needed, but they didn't have this long-term vision, and I think the long-term vision is needed. So that goes to the funding question of, yes, I don't think this money would be one time. I think as is depleted, I would ask, and hopefully future governors would ask, to support that. The $1.5 million for community colleges would be sort of specific in terms of how it is used. But I will tell you this, that right now, for example, I have been meeting with a company that is a very large company that is interested in perhaps moving to Wyoming. They and companies that have moved here and other companies that I've been speaking to, one of the questions that they ask, understanding that we have the best taxes in terms of new businesses, they understand our quality of life, is they want to know about workforce. Will you be able to provide me X amount of machinists? Will you be able to do that in short order? Will the community colleges be able to step up and provide that workforce long term? And so it is a stark representative. I don't suggest that $1.5 million is going to be sufficient to fully address that question, but I think it's an appropriate number to get us started. And as we have Company A and Company B that we hopefully will get recruited in the next year or two, and they say we need 500 machinists, that is money, working with our community colleges to get that process started. And I'm using machinists as an example. It may be nurses, it may be welders, it may be something else. But I want, as I talk to those companies, say that we're serious about this and we're serious about meeting the needs of those companies that are here and companies that we would recruit. So the $1.5 million is a start. I'm hopeful that this program is a 20-year program, that it has great success. I think it's certainly needed, and we need to have those funds to support it.
Representative Conley.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I have four questions, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. So, Governor, I want to follow up on Representative Stubson's question about Endow. I think I understand what the community colleges would do. They would respond to that need for kind of particular machinists or nurses. But what about that additional $1 million? What is that for the task force? I think somebody else's mic is on.
Thank you, Representative. So the $1 million is for a couple things. One, as you're probably aware, we have worked now probably almost 4 years on how do we start up an industrial park in the state of Wyoming. And we've not, in my mind, advanced the ball nearly far enough. And part of that is we've not dedicated a single person in our office to just do that. Part of it is we have not provided an opportunity for our counties to get involved and help them with the funding and for the planning that they would need to have a park involved in that. So one is we would hope that funding would help in the industrial park effort. Two, we are hoping that as we look at things such as the integrated test center, that we can continue to be able to, as part of Endow, work with that. Three is the structure that we have now, and it's in its infancy right now, we anticipate sort of a CEO working group that would meet 2 to 4 times a year. There would be need a small amount of funding for that. The bigger group would be sort of an executive committee, would be made up largely of Wyoming's businesses, some agency heads, and we want to be able to support in particular, research that they may want to do. For example, if we do an industrial park and we recognize, as I think we do, we may need a tenant to be anchor tenant, who should that be? Do we go out and build a Barbie doll plant, or do we do something much more refined with the data that we would need to accumulate of what is the right type of business that provide that data? So a fair amount of that money, perhaps a majority, would be to help our local governments to provide research for us on how we go about building an industrial park, how we continue to work on the integrated test center, how we have an opportunity working with state parks now as it's trying to expand our outdoor economy. How do we add to those things? The $1 million was not a tally representative that we said 20,000 here, 20,000 here. Because it's in its infancy and we want these groups to have an opportunity, it was our best judgment as to what we thought the right amount would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so would it be fair to say that it would be for perhaps additional staff in your office and then a granting process?
We don't anticipate now additional staff in our office, but we do look forward and we think there is opportunities that we may have an opportunity to apply for grants, and that if we have grant writers and we don't have a designated grant writer in our office, if there was a way to do that as part of the grant to offset what that cost is, but it was not to develop or add to the staff in my office. That was not part of the reason for the money.
Great. Thank you. And so kind of moving on to a different question. And you talked in your statement as well as in your comments about bonding for a new penitentiary if we need it. And so I've got two questions along those lines. Is that the Judiciary Committee was looking at some alternatives to incarceration rather than needing to build out the penitentiary. I mean, I understand there are problems in Rawlins, but there are some real possibilities for cost savings with implementing some of those alternatives. So I'm curious about your thought about that. But then, in general, I'm curious about your thoughts about more bonding for the state rather than less, that, in fact, we have such a good rating right now and rates are so low that we could, instead of paying cash for capital construction, do much more bonding.
The representative, the first part of your question there, I think the judiciary and the chairman of the judiciary in particular have done some very good work on how we improve our judicial system, our justice system within the state of Wyoming. Having looked through that bill, I would say that we are looking forward to providing some of our suggestions on how that may be improved. But I do think that the intent of the bill is to not – it's. I don't think it's first to look at necessarily cost savings. It's just how to improve the justice system, how to provide better alternatives than incarceration. And we see, you know, not related to that bill, but we see, for example, drug courts. We have been working to start a veterans court here in Cheyenne, that there can be some good alternatives that, in fact, do save money, but importantly also have better success. And so we're, as I said, I think we will have some recommended changes to their work. But I do think, as you look at it, there's an opportunity to save money. First, of course, also is, you know, we just want to do a good job in that area. And as we see, you know, what some other states have done, some have had success in that way, and some have seen increased in crime rates. And you don't have any savings when you have increase in crime rates. Now, as you know, when it comes to crime, it is hard to gauge sometimes what is the cause of that. If it's a depressed economy, that can increase crime rates. So there's a lot of factors looking at it. But I think it is a step in the right direction for us to be looking at it. The second question is in terms of bonding. I think that, you know, we were really, I think it was my first year in office, we got that AAA credit rating, and we celebrated that because that was such a wonderful thing. But we've not used it. And if you talk to a CEO of most businesses, they want a combination of cash and borrowing. And I think that in particular with the prison, but I certainly would not say limited to prison, there is opportunities there. But in addition to bonding, one of the areas that we have also considered, and we need to look and see what – we're not sure on the law on this yet, but we have been bouncing it around our office is – and this overstates it, but for purposes of illustration, I will say this, that we – on some of our cash, we're making 0.00-whatever% interest. And when we look at, for example – the dormitories at the University of Wyoming as a new project, if that was something we wanted to do. Could we loan them the money at 2.5%? No better risk than the university. We know where they live. And get a lot better return on our money and also do something that's important to our state. And so I look forward to whether it's bonding or just direct borrowing, from the state, could we improve our rate of return on some of our cash and at the same time do some projects that are important for the future?
Great, thank you. Honestly, me too. I mean, that's a way for us to earn or not spend lots of money that we're spending right now. But here's my next question, and obviously I would be disappointed about your comments regarding Medicaid expansion, but I want to put a little bug in your ear. Last week I had the opportunity to be in D.C., and I visited with our senators, including Senator Enzi, and he shared with us that he will be responsible in his capacity as chair of the Budget Committee to introduce the repeal and replace bill in the first week. And I mentioned to him that we have a statutory prohibition on U-acting in relation to Medicaid expansion, and what his thoughts were on that as the new Trump administration moves forward with the repeal and replace, and the opportunity for us and you to move in that regard in between sessions if we remove that statutory prohibition. So I'm curious about your thoughts regarding that. Senator Enzi actually was in favor of it, so I'll just put that out there.
Well, I'm in favor of anything he's in favor of. Is that a no? I think it's, you know, I've tried twice, failed twice on Medicaid expansion. And there's different points of view on what the right way for the state is, for the direction of the state. But as I think about, you know, starting out in my first year, suing on the ACA, losing, and everyone else losing on it, I felt we were in a position where you have to make the best of the situation. We still have roughly 20,000 people who are falling the gap. We still have small hospitals that are operating on a short cash reserve, 60, 90-day cash reserve. We still recognize the economic value in having a good health care system in the state of Wyoming. But when you talk about repeal and replace, it's hard to make that recommendation knowing that it may not be there when I didn't have success when it was there. And so that was the reason I felt that it wasn't right to make the recommendation at this point. But on repeal and replace, there's a couple things that I still continue to worry about. One is, remember that ACA is fairly entwined with our whole economic system in this country because healthcare is such a big part of it. We have healthcare providers that have now built their businesses around it. We have insurers that have built some of their business around it. And what I'm hearing from people who are involved in that world, they have a concern that if you repeal it on day one but don't replace it until year two, that is a lot of time in a state of flux. And so my first comment is if they repeal it, I hope they quickly replace it with something that is of value. And if our senators and the Republicans are in charge of what the replace would look like, I'm assuming it's something that would certainly not only be agreeable to me but to our largely Republican Wyoming legislature, and they would provide me the opportunity to act with the law that Republicans built in the best way and the quickest way possible.
And my last question.
Yes.
Okay. And actually, this is just a procedural one. As we move forward, one of the things that this committee has always looked at with the budget is vacancies. And we actually pulled up the vacancy list yesterday. And one of the questions I had, and I'm not real confident of the answer, is, are there any rules or regulations from the executive branch regarding vacancies with state agencies right now? So when we look at that list, we see, for example, how long a position has been vacant. Some of them are 2 months. My understanding is those folks might be still being paid out when it comes to vacation. That really isn't a position that we should be looking at eliminating. But others are longer, and I asked a question regarding, you know, is there a freeze going on? So if you could just tell us from kind of your view, what happens with vacant positions,
right,
so as we go through that
list?
Well,
we've been I can't remember when we started the process, but some time ago on freezing positions. And so, for example, the state crime lab, which you read is behind schedule, if they need a position, there's a process that they have to go through, which starts with a committee that has to recommend for or against it, and then they can appeal to my chief of staff and ultimately to me to get the position. We've been I think it's fair to say we've been very stingy on providing those positions. But we've also tried to be smart. If something's needed, we try to respond to that. So currently we have these positions that are frozen but have no funding, so even if we wanted to fill them, there's 92 at corrections, 6 at audit, and 4 at health. And so as you all look at going through the process and saying, for example, if you said we want to cut some more positions, I would urge you not to just look at they've been frozen for a year or have not been, excuse me, if they have not been filled for a year. The reason they may not have been filled for a year is because we have not filled it based upon the system that we have in place. That's not necessarily a reflection that it's not needed or an important position. It's a reflection that we've been fairly stingy on trying to make sure the, you know, we're very conservative on the budget during this time period. So to answer that, you see something that's been open for a year, that doesn't mean it's just an unimportant position. It very well could mean we just haven't filled it because we're trying to save money and reap the benefit of those reversions.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up. All right, I want to push you a little bit on that one. If a position hasn't been filled for a year, how can you say that it's unimportant?
How can I say it's not important?
Yeah.
Well, because I, just for example, in our office, if you look, our office, or perhaps a better example, is in the Department of Health or Department of Corrections. As you see, 92 positions available in the Department of Corrections. I think if you talk to the director of Department of Corrections, he would tell you those positions are important positions for him to have, that he's trying to bounce around overtime payments, and that his burn rate on overtime, he's always looking at that. Would it be better to hire those positions? So I think that may be the best example is Department of Corrections. Those are important positions. And as we have turnover at the Department of Corrections, because people are getting burned out because they're working time and a half or double shifts, I think he would tell you he would rather fill those positions. They're not unimportant. He's just trying to wrestle with the current financial situation the best he can.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, just a quick question. I mean, and just so we're clear, I mean, you balance the general fund budget with using the 1% statutory ongoing, the statutory severance that we pulled out that, you know, and historically it's been used for general fund expenses during down times. We started saving it back in, I think, 2004, and it really, you know, when the Permanent Mill Trust Fund was just over $1 billion, now it's approaching $8 billion and pretty significant resource, huge asset for our state. But talking about that, using that going forward, and then talking about the education side of the budget, which really this deficit now is 4 times the size of the general fund deficit. And so that part we're going to have to, I mean, it's just going to have to be this ongoing debate about that. I think it's going to be a really important issue, this 1% statutory. And I know, you know, we talk about it quickly, but it's going to be a significant debate and how we use that and best use it to provide our services. The next piece, though, I really, that you talked about the education cliff that we're approaching. And but the other piece of this also is school facilities. And, you know, we've got, I think, a little over 360 schools in our state. In the last 20 years, last 18 years with Coal East Bonus, we've, and some federal mineral royalties, we've, and all these schools are basically on a 50-year replacement. I mean, that's what our major maintenance is set up for. And so we've replaced about a third of them or renovated. We've had about 175 replacements, 25 renovations or so, about 100 out of the 360, about a third over the last 15 years. And so we've got this, and I think the number, it's pretty remarkable when you look at it. You say, well, we build all these schools, but the square footage is basically the same it was in 1990. It's about 23 million square feet statewide. I think replacement on that is about $7 billion or something. That's a recent deal. I'm throwing a lot of numbers out, but the one that, so this $7 billion, 23 million square feet asset that for generations was built by our forefathers, our local people. Still about two-thirds of it out there has been built by our local folks. But we have a major maintenance issue. That's about $60 million a year to major maintenance. That's $7 billion in assets. And I mean, there's no revenue source anywhere for it, and let alone to build another elementary school in this state. I mean, let alone to find $15 million to build a school. And so, I guess I'd be interested on your thoughts. I mean, you see that as, you know, a lot of talk about the operations piece, $400 million a year, but what about this this facility piece?
Yeah, that's Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. I think the as you outline those numbers there and you look at what we're looking at, new schools this year, $80 million, as you look at a reduction in major maintenance, one of the worst financial decisions we could make, it seems to me, is to have built all those schools, repaired all those schools, and then not take care of them. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. And so referring back to your statutory diversion, I agree. I mean, it's what we're using now. We may keep using it for the general fund operation side. As I sit here, I do not believe that on the school side for operations that would be a good thing to look at. I am more open to looking at it on the major maintenance side, if that is a partial remedy to be able to use some of that. We can't, the billions we've spent building these new schools, repairing them, to not have sufficient funds for major maintenance certainly is not a wise decision. I mean, that's just something we want to avoid. Otherwise, we're going to be spending a lot more building new ones in 20 years rather than a 50 or 50 plus year cycle. So that is something I'm open to on some of that money for the CapCon side, K through 12. I would say also that I think it's a very good time with this committee and the legislature as a whole to look at generally the budget to provide as many opportunities for the executive branch to weigh in to provide recommendations as possible. And one of the frustrations, Mr. Chairman, I've had is that there is many provisions in law that says the governor shall recommend this. The governor shall not recommend this. In addition to the legal wranglings that may mean, I think it's important for the executive branch to provide a full, here's our view on what we should do with the budget, whether it's a statutory diversion, whether it's the rainy day account. And right now, if you look at the law, you know, it says the governor shall not recommend this in terms of the LSRA. The governor shall recommend increased money for rebasing. And I don't think, you know, a large portion of the public recognizes that when we talk about the governor's budget, in statute, there's a lot of things in there that says I shall recommend or shall not recommend. As aside from the legal question on that, I think it is helpful for all of you and helpful for the executive branch and for the public next governor to be able to make recommendations as they see fit, which will be accepted or rejected appropriately by the legislature. The statutory diversion is certainly one of those areas, which, you know, is new to me. You are exactly right. It has been used, and prior it was a general fund use. And, you know, it's if that, and it's not right now, but if that's taken off the table as I shall not recommend that, then I'm limited to further options as we go into next session on what I could recommend or not recommend. And I'm not saying that particular is, but so that's a more general statement of something I think we all ought to be looking at is removing those dictates or restrictions on what governors recommend to this body.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick governor, and that's maybe more of a kind of commentary too, and really appreciate your message and your recommendations. But I want to just kind of point out too, there's probably three members, I think, in the body that were here in the 90s. And, you know, for 10 straight years, we made general fund appropriations to the school foundation program. And so when we started saving this money in the rainy day fund, the LISRA, and, you know, it's been a lot of debate. When do we start spending it? When is it raining? And almost all these old timers say it's raining when you have to start transferring general funds to school foundation. And because we've been there, and we did it for 10 straight years in the 90s. And so I think when you talk about that, I think it's important all of us just to remind ourselves, because I think people out in Wyoming think, well, start spending some of that savings. And I think it's an important message to say we are. I mean, the rainy day fund, the LSRA, for a brief shining moment, was $2 billion. You know, it's at 1.5 now. We're going to spend $640 million in education savings, the education rainy day fund. So, I mean, you look at our savings, and if you count this diversion of 1% statutory severance, which was a savings, you know, we've spent, at the end of next fiscal year, we will have spent $1.2 billion in savings over 3 years. And so I would say to the people, I would remind all of us, we are spending our savings. We spent $1.2 billion. We got about $1.5 billion left. And so we'll continue to do that. That's what we saved it for. But it's going to be important as we move forward, I guess, to bring all this onto the table and all the facts.
Chairman Harshma, I agree. And, you know, it's like I said, the statutory diversion used to be used for general fund as a matter of course. Things change. Circumstances change. And it does seem important to me during this time that we allow ourselves as many options as possible to look at, because we can't say we are not doing something to address education because that's the way we do things right now. And we have the ability to make those decisions, whether it's a statutory diversion or otherwise. We are spending on the rainy day fund, the $36 million you guys used to shore up the budget last time. My suggestion on the rainy day fund is I still think there needs to be some more objective criteria of how we use it, when we use it. We sort of set maxes on it, the 5% or the $108 million, and then what time period. And the time period's difficult. If we know we're going to be in good shape in 2 years, that's a different discussion than if we're going to be in a downturn for 10 years. And so I think all those things are important, but you're right. We are spending out of the rainy day fund. I would like to see as my suggestions that it doesn't say in there, I shall not recommend this out of the rainy day fund. I shall not recommend this out of the rainy day fund, because I think that blurs the line between the separation of powers, and I don't think it provides you all or me as many options as possible to deal with these unique circumstances.
On a personal note, I thank you for coming here today. Speaking for myself and those that have been here for quite some time, and it's been my great honor to serve with you in leadership and on this committee for the past 6+ years, 7.5 years, I guess. You are a class act.
Thank you, sir.
And I mean that from my heart. It's been an honor to serve with you, Governor, and I appreciate your willingness to come before us. These are tough times, but we will certainly work with you, and it's been a great relationship. So thank you so much for your leadership.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thanks for the kind comments to all of you who were no longer be serving on the JC. Your very kind comments, Mr. Chairman, and I feel the same about you. It's really been a privilege, and you all have taught me a lot, none of which I will admit, but you have taught me a lot. But I do think, as we talk about the budget and the challenges, mostly on the education side, but the general challenges, is that I can't think of a better place to work through these challenges than the Wyoming legislature, with citizen legislature. And I know you've heard me say that 100 times. But as I look at other governors and the challenges they have, we are well served in Wyoming by the citizen legislature. And, you know, as I reflect on being sort of in my fourth quarter of my time here and, you know, looking forward to getting back on the ranch, I know one of the things I'll always cherish is the opportunity to work with extraordinary people. And certainly you, Chairman, and the others who have been on here, thank you very much for your service. Wyoming owes you a debt for the challenges. And if you agree with me on everything I've said, it's really, really a great service to the state of Wyoming.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Next order of business will be to allow a little change of personnel, and then we'll start working into the budgets, starting with 001, Governor. We're going to take a little JAC 5-minute break as soon as the governor departs. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. Are we streaming? Okay. So today, the first thing that we're going to take up is, of course, budget 001, which is the governor's office, which includes Homeland Security. And we have, of course, Chief of Staff Carrie Jo Gray here, and a number of people. Because we are streaming live, it'll be important that whoever addresses the committee identify themselves so that the public out there knows who's speaking and not. And with that, Carrie Jo, we are ready to hear your presentation on 001. You're on.
Am I on? Is that on?
Yeah, okay. With the red light.
Thank you.
It's on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carrie Gray. I'm the Chief of Staff for Governor Meade, and I'm here with the governor's budget for the Homeland Security portion of the budget. Director Guy Cameron of Homeland Security is here to make that presentation. And then when the committee moves to the residence budget, I'll also make the presentation of the residence budget on behalf of the First Lady. So the governor's budget starts, I always get a little off on how is best for to proceed with y'all, but on page 8 is the first part of the governor's budget. It's the administration unit of the governor's budget. Is that where you want to start?
That would be fine.
Okay. On page 8. This portion of the governor's budget reflects the administrative side of the governor's office, and the governor has reduced the budget by $170,747 and one employee out of that section of the budget, and that would be the sum, really, of what's there.
And, committee, if you have questions as we're going along, please feel free to ask the FTE, what was that for? What position was that?
Mr. Chairman, that FTE would have been the person who sat at the front desk and did boards and commissions was the greeter over the course of the governor's time in office. That was alternately filled by Dee Dee Reed, Leslie Arnett, and Vicki Bowser. When Vicki Bowser left last fall, we didn't replace that position and now have reduced it out of the budget. The next part of the governor's budget would be found on page 11. That is the policy office side of the budget. And you'd see that the governor has reduced the policy side of the administration budget by $586,749 in two positions. Those positions would have been policy advisors to the governor. We lost several people and replaced, but these two particular positions were held by Cameron Nasminia and by Melissa Bartley. Melissa did healthcare policy advising, and we've asked Michelle Panos to do all the social services and human services side of the policy advising, and Cameron Nasminia did oil and gas commission. And also international relations, and those duties have been spread out among other members of the governor's staff.
Senator Burns.
Who replaced Tony Young?
So we're not going to have Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns. We will no longer have a deputy chief of staff, Senator Burns, but what we'll do is we've just reconfigured all the duties in the office. So per se, Tony didn't get replaced, but his position is being filled by my mind just went blank. By Mike. Okay, but we filled his position. Yeah.
You filled his position.
Yeah. Well, that person will come on board on December 19th.
Well, we're not allowed to know who it is.
Well, my mind just went blank, Mike. Mike McGrady. I couldn't think of him. I wanted to call him Mike Enzi, and I knew that was wrong.
Mike McCracken, newspaper?
Mike McGrady from the Attorney General's office, who does natural resource policy litigation at the Attorney General's office. He's a deputy over there.
So he's coming on as the assistant chief of...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we're not going to have a deputy chief of staff. He'll say we've kind of done some reconfiguring in our office. We have Jeremiah Riemann has moved over to focus on the Endow initiative. And so the responsibilities that Jeremiah had and the responsibilities that Tony Young had as the deputy chief of staff will be disseminated among other staff members. And one of those will be Mike McGrady, who will join us on December 19th.
In what position?
He'd be a policy advisor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman? And I apologize. I'm getting up to speed here again. So, Carrie Jo, just can we go back to the governor's enterprise reductions? Could you just walk me through that?
Where are they?
It's on page 7.
Page 7.
And I understand they had to do with a health care holiday and a couple other things. Could you just walk us through that real quick?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I'm lost about what we're looking at on page 7.
So it's section 5. We talk about Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're good.
I'm way rusty.
You're all good. Go ahead.
And then talking about section 5, the governor's enterprise reductions. I think we see that reoccurring. And then that's something that's applied to all of the agencies throughout. Just a little explanation, please.
Just let me just make sure that I've read it, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, so then I can make sure that I give you a complete explanation. So these reductions found on page 7, section 5, governor's enterprise reductions, are reductions that went across all state agencies. And what they occurred is that if your group insurance, there's a ratio in your insurance of how much reserves that you have on hand. If you exceed those reserves, then you actually take a federal penalty on that amount of money. That's occurred over the course of the governor's administration, I think, twice before, so that you actually give a rate holiday to your employees, but you also give a rate holiday to the employer, the state of Wyoming. So so we were in that situation, and there was a reduction in the amount of the of 1 month of employee group health insurance. And I might have to have Kevin Hibbert actually tell us the amount of the rate holiday, so I don't remember what it was. Additionally, the legislature had appropriated money for an anticipated rate increase in employee health insurance. And in fact, as we had an actuarial come in and review the current rates that we were paying for health insurance, so both the employer and the employee side, and what health care costs look like, because it's driven by your employees, by your usage, and by what health care costs are doing across the state, we were able to determine that we would be able to not need that appropriation for a greater increase in insurance and health care costs in the state. And so there was a reduction for the stable rate reduction. And finally, there at the bottom, periodically, the Employee Compensation Committee meets, and they review the cost of living in various counties across the state. Historically, counties that will at different times have an increased cost of living would be Converse County, Campbell County, and Teton County. And an additional stipend is given to employees who live in those areas, for example, well, to all state employees. But I remember years ago it first came in because there was problems with getting law enforcement to be able to afford to live in Teton County. So consequently, it was hard to fill those positions. So that if a county is in a position where an employee gets a stipend because the cost of living is high, that is periodically reviewed. And then when those factors that cause that increase, for example, the cost of rent or housing go down, then sometimes that factor is also reduced and that money is taken out of the employee's check. So Converse County, who was in a boom, went down, and so that money was reduced. I don't have off the top of my head the exact dollar amounts that those were.
And, Mr. Chairman. So, Kerry, with that, I apologize for being slow, but back on page 8, when we look for Department 001, and we're in the 100s, we see 196, and we have a reduction for employer health insurance benefits. Part of that reduction is for the loss of the FTE, and I assume part of it is as associated with the premiums going down. Is that – Kevin's shaking his head. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, that's correct. Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, what is there off of our standard budget, is there then a percentage reduction overall in the health insurance that we can point to or state for this second half of the biennium? Or did those premiums go up as were anticipated?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Hibbert, budget. Just quick statistics. The stable rate netted a savings of $19.4 million for the enterprise. The rate holiday, the one-month rate holiday, netted a savings of $8.7 million for the enterprise. The housing allowance netted a savings of $254,200. That's $254,000. For a total enterprise reduction of $28.4 million, that also includes the Supreme Court, District Courts, and a small portion associated with the Commission on Judicial Conduct. The math that works on this is when we took the rate holiday, that's 1 month of what you had in the budget for 17 and 18 across all agencies. Now, that's the general fund portion that I'm speaking of. So we just went into 17 and 18. What they had, we took. The other one is the stable rate. So basically, we're going to be doing 11 months in 17 and 5 months in 18 for the 17 share of the actual budget amount. So simply put, what we did is we went into the IBAR system. This is how much each employee was being budgeted for. This is a budget statistic in the budget. That's why we're making a budget reduction. And we compared that to what employee group insurances are paying on the cafeteria plan, that'd be family, single, et cetera. And we took those amounts out of the budget based upon a stable rate, meaning we're not going to have a rate increase. Now, we did anticipate a rate increase, but we don't believe that's going to be necessary. Now, we also started 3 years ago, if you remember, working on how do we get to where we can work on a smaller cash balance in employee group insurance? In fact, this body approved us to be able to have some borrowing authority in case we went below that threshold. We're in a good place, and we even have a fallback position on this because we started this process 3 years ago.
What, Mr. Chair, go
ahead. Let's have a follow-up from
Representative. Yeah, and I'll get done with this. But so when, because we're going to have a pretty new committee look at the next standard budget. What we'll see is that standard budget coming in with having a reduction in the premium rates that were in the last standard budget, plus whatever additions that you might be anticipating in the next biennium.
That's correct. When we build a budget, we will start at this level with these reductions, and then, as we have in the last 2 years, we have an actuarialist that looks at our plan and our people in our plan and give us an estimate so we can build what the budget necessity will be for 19 and 20.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Just a quick question on the size of that reserve now, what it was and what it is now. And
Mr. Chairman, after the rate holiday, before the rate holiday, we were about $70 million. After the rate holiday, we were about $44 million. As of this month, we're at $42
million. Mr. Chairman, is there a federal kind of regulation or pushback on that, on the size of that?
Mr. Chairman, if you remember several years ago, and Kerry was correct, that a particular federal agency looked at this cash balance that we had and said that that's too much to have. So what takes place is all these statistics that I've spoke today are simply the general fund portion of it. But other agencies, Department of Transportation, for example, they have contributions that flow from federal dollars to make this contribution to their employees group insurance. So today's conversation is strictly on the general fund reductions.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carrie Jo, I want to go back to kind of understanding the personnel changes. So it looks like you eliminated two policy analysts, those 40 and 41, but replaced Tony Young with another policy analyst. And so is that one of those 40 or 41, or is Tony Young's position being reclassified in some way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, there's not a lot of difference between the classification of the Deputy Chief of Staff and the Policy Advisor, so we won't reclassify the committee. The position will just fill it. The actual history of the Governor's office with regard to FTEs is that when the Governor started in 2011, there was 27 and a half positions in the governor's office. Today there are 18 positions in the governor's office. The monthly salary for employees in the governor's office was $169,804, and today it is $148,907. So even after different legislatively authorized salary increases, the salaries in the governor's office are down about $21,000 a month. The actual FTEs are down about 9.5. And so as we've reconfigured, we've just allocated the work among those people who remain.
Okay. Further questions?
I did, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I didn't really want to question the governor on this, but I'll question you. with the Endow program, is that set up, that'll be ran through the governor's office as a policy component. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, what we're in the process of doing is developing a structure for Endow, but at this point in time, we've asked for those monies to be placed with the governor's office to indicate the degree of importance that we attach to that, and also to make sure that we get a structure that works well for the legislature and well for the governor's office.
And Mr. Chairman, with respect to the 1.5 for the workforce development component of that, is that discussed going to the Community College Commission, or is that something that would still rest with an outside agency like the Business Council or the Governor's Office?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, so Jeremiah Riemann and different folks that the Governor has appointed to the committee and Alex Kane from our office are working to put together a white paper for the legislature to actually show the structure and how that would work. So I think the governor continued to say it's in its infancy, that so the exact details of how he would want to operate that money I think are still under development to some degree. When we put together the budget, the anticipation would be is that it would go to the governor's office, and then if an initiative or a company or a need arose, that the governor could then pass that through the Community College Commission out to different colleges. And again, as this kind of comes into this session, I think there will be more details, and that is probably subject to some modification based on what those folks recommend to the governor, and then he'll make sure that he makes that clear to y'all.
So, Mr. Chairman, and I can appreciate that you're just trying to get this off the ground. So is that something that comes as a governor's letter, or is that going to come as legislation, or probably a budget footnote's not going to work anymore?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I think that what would occur with regard to the details of that structure, and based on the questions that we're receiving here, is that we will clarify that in a governor's letter and make sure that comes up to you. But we are working on a piece of legislation at the same time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Continue. I think we're on page 11.
So I think with the questions, Mr. Chairman, maybe we just finished page 11. And so we would move to page 13.
Okay.
This is the single positive exception request in the governor's budget, and it is the tribal liaison. I think the governor referenced that in his opening remarks, that this body, the legislature went ahead and authorized tribal liaisons, but they limited the funding to 1 year. And they asked for a report to be submitted on November 1st to the committee, and then we're going to take that up again in this session to determine whether it was appropriate to do a second year of funding. Originally, the appropriation was for $190,000 a year. In looking at the expenses that they, as they occurred over the last year and how we were able to do that, we were able to have an agreement with both the Northern Arapaho and the Eastern Shoshone that the program could operate appropriately on $160,000. So we're not asking for $190,000, but $160,000, for the second year. And I think, as the governor, suggested, that this is a legislatively driven program, but we think that there has been improvements, and I think the report, which was filed by Leslie Shakespeare and by Sergio Maldonado with a supplement from the governor's office, would kind of give a really good overview of how it's been going.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out why it isn't possible to have a single tribal liaison.
Because there's two tribes.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Burns, that really the interest of the two tribes, they operate entirely independently of each other. Currently, they no longer have business council meetings, and so they operate separate programs. Their social services programs are different from one another. Their court system currently is structured differently from one another. So the issues and sometimes the approach of the tribes are not identical to each other, and I think you actually would get, if the idea is to improve in communication, I think you would actually have a breakdown in communication if you tried to only use one tribal liaison.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand the friction between the two tribes, and if they were each a representative of the tribes to the governor's office, I could understand why you'd need two. But this is a tribal liaison who's a state employee serving at the pleasure of the governor. And so I don't understand why you couldn't have somebody who is the liaison to the Shoshone and the liaison to the Arapaho.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, the
I'm still
the
trying
program.
To understand, I guess, what the role of the liaison is.
So the program was actually started prior to the administration, to Governor Mead's administration. We've talked about this a lot. We think it's a legislatively driven program. The governor, when he was U.S. attorney, had made it a point himself to go down on a regular and consistent basis and meet with the business councils of the tribes. After he became governor, he maintains that. He goes down, there was an effort early on in our administration for the governor and the tribes to meet once a month. That didn't actually work out well for them. So about on a quarterly basis, they either come to Cheyenne or he goes there to meet with the tribes. But once this program was established, the tribes themselves feel very strongly about this program and feel that it's effective for them and that this is an effective communication device. I think there has been, for both the legislature and the administrative branch, some question about how it actually should function. That was the reason, I think, that you all asked for the quarterly report. So when this sort of focus came onto this program and there were questions, the way that it was structured is the tribes actually submit the names of who should be their tribal liaison. So the liaison is more from the perspective of the tribe than it is from state government. But what we established was a weekly phone call and meeting, a requirement that they come up and meet with, they join our cabinet meetings, and then we have them help facilitate the work that we're trying to do with different agencies in the tribe. They attend, I think, the tribal select committee and tribal relations committee, and they go to a lot of meetings on behalf of their tribe, not just with the governor's office or with agencies, but with different groups. Their role, I think, is still a little unformed as far as what you expect out of them, what their own individual tribes expect out of them and what we expect out of them. But again, it's a program that we kind of inherited. It's a program that began to get some scrutiny from the legislature over the course of time that the governor's been in office. And I think there was an effort by the legislature itself to try to answer those very questions that you have. Those are questions that we share. I would tell you those are questions that I think to some degree the liaisons would share, is what is the exact role of this program and how effective it is. I would tell you this year with the sort of difficult relations that are going on down on the Wind River Indian Reservation, it has been very helpful. It is first from the tribal liaisons that we learned that the court system had totally broken down and that the BIA was now hearing all the Arapaho cases and that the Eastern Shoshone had a separate judge and that that complicated and already complicated judicial situation. We were able to help them and they were able to help us work through that. So I see that there's some, you know, real efficacy to this relationship maybe now more than ever before, but it is still yet a little unformed.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Carrie Jo, and, you know, and part of this was trying to get at whether this was really, you know, this program added value or not. And we hear that the tribes say it's a valuable program, but I'm just wondering, do the tribes have any skin in the game? Do they have any financial responsibility at all for even the infrastructure underlying the tribal liaisons? That's sort of question number one. And number two, you know, if there was a requirement that the tribes put in 10%, 20% of the expenses of the tribal liaisons, is that something that you think that they would still value these positions enough that they would want them, or are they only valuable if the state's paying 100% of the share on it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I don't know that I can answer that question because I think those folks are really independent. I have that is not a discussion that that I've ever had either with the liaisons or with members of either business council. I don't think the governor's had that discussion. You know, that makes a difference to people when they actually – I think right now these two positions are entirely funded by state general fund. There is no – I do think that what happens when they're down on the Wind River Indian Reservation, that there's office space and some support, some in-kind kind of support that each tribe gives to their liaison. I think that there are regular meetings between the liaisons and the individual business councils where those liaisons report to the business council what they have learned, you know, from meeting with the legislature, from coming up and meeting with the executive branch, and there's some reporting back. I think a lot of work needs to be done to sort of figure out to make these effective in the respect that you would think. But again, I think right now with the relationships where they are, that there has been value, and I think that each tribe and in our office would tell you that the work over the last year has improved the program greatly, but there are still many improvements that could be made.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Just to remind me, the liaisons are each members of the tribe they're supposed to be liaisoning with?
Mr. Chairman, liaising Senator Burns. That's correct, yeah. Sergio Maldonado is from the Northern Arapaho, and Leslie Shakespeare is the Eastern Shoshone. Leslie Shakespeare has just resigned because he is newly elected to the Business Council for the Eastern Shoshone. And so the process would be, if it followed how these two folks were appointed, is that the Eastern Shoshone Business Council would provide names to the governor's office, and we would select among two or three names. In each case, what we did, because it seemed most appropriate for the relationship, is they obviously have a key recommendation, somebody that they believe serves the role best from their perspective, and we have deferred to their recommendation in that.
And those names are recommended by by the business council of the respective tribes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's correct.
Okay. I didn't want to spend too much time on it. It's $160,000.
Yeah.
And we were already warned, don't spend too much time on $100,000 and then let $20 million go for not enough time. Thank you.
So the next page is page 17. This is the Commission on Uniform Laws. And so the Commission on Uniform Laws, for the most part, is dues-paying organization. Although we do pay for our two commissioners some small amount of travel reimbursement for the meetings that they need to attend.
Yeah, really.
We actually don't pay the full dues of the organization to begin with, and so there was no room to cut this particular program. So the Section 323 adjustment that you see in Column 4 would have been the penny plan targeted reduction, and as the legislation gave some flexibility to the governor, if a particular section or agency couldn't take the cut to find that someplace else, this just simply shows that I think this might have come from corrections, but that another agency 17. Picked up that $1,009 reduction and it wasn't taken out of the Commission on Uniform Laws. Next one is on page 20. It is the clean coal technology. This is a task force that works on recommendations and research projects on clean coal and advanced conversion technologies. The task force will actually expire June 30th, 2017, but we have been able to use their work and some of this money to be helpful to the Integrated Test Center and to other work that's going on with regard to the industrial task force and carbon technology. So it's been a helpful task force in terms of what it's contributed to the work that we're doing as the legislature and the governor's office, but we did recommend a reduction out of here of $2,000.
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carrie Jo, do you know if there is a bill in the works to extend this task force?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I do not know that. I don't know that.
Yes.
Is it sunsetted?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, it expires June 17th, or June of 2017.
Thank you.
Then I'm going to skip Homeland Security and go to page 35, the Endangered Species Administration. So this is a program where you have an endangered species coordinator, works closely with the University of Wyoming and with the Game and Fish on endangered species issues. This position and this research becomes important, I think, to the state in many ways. But I just wrote down, in preparation of coming here today, the glacier stonefly and the arboreal toad, because those are species that you may not hear a lot about, but that they are being considered for listing on the Endangered Species Act, and that if they are listed, it has effect on agriculture and on recreation and on industry throughout Wyoming. So, for example, with regard to the glacier stonefly, the University of Wyoming has been doing a lot of research on that, and the recommendation to list that fly comes in the face of their research that the fly is way more common across the whole state of Wyoming and in the western United States across mountain ranges than they have in their evidence that they're using for the listing decision. So this money is used for those kinds of issues. And in that regard, and it's been, I think, a real value, a quiet value that you may not hear so much about across the state of Wyoming. Nonetheless, as we make forward with our cuts, we did recommend a small cut out of this money. It would be grant money that has been used by the University of Wyoming and by the Game and Fish in these pursuits.
Yeah.
Has an insect been listed before?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I don't know. I would just be almost sure that across the United States that it has, but in Wyoming currently there are a number of insects and plants that are being considered for listing, this glacier stonefly being the one that was just the most recent topic of attention. So, but I can't tell you of one that has been listed, even though I'm sure there are.
Thank you.
Representative Conley.
17 beetles, 19 butterflies, 2 damselflies, a dragonfly, and a grasshopper.
Thank you, Representative.
Carrie Jo, with regards to, while we're here, so there was an FTE, I think, that was recommended to be transferred to YDOT via B-11. It doesn't necessarily show up in the tables, but was
Mr.
removed.
Chairman, that's in Homeland Security, I believe.
Is that 34 and 35? Is that a different page? All right. I am sorry.
We're good? Okay. So, the next page, I think I have this right, would be page 40. This is baseline scientific assessment. And so when you do baseline studies that help with regard to, again, I think different kinds of listing processes, but also with regard to the advancement of industry or the maintaining Wyoming's primacy with regard to different areas that we would think that the federal government shouldn't come in. This is the money that we use to work on this. So we have a baseline when Pavilion came up and the questions on fracking. We implemented and developed baseline water testing for all wells in Wyoming. And that's been an effective way to maintain Wyoming primacy and also to maintain that balance between really a clean environment and effective industrial development. So this is another area that we think the funding is important, but we also, in an effort to – we tried to lead the way. We always try to lead the way in making reductions out of our own budget. And so this is an area that we thought we could still continue effectively with a $100,000 reduction.
Mr. Chair.
I think it's Representative Nicholas.
Carrie, first I want to say thank you for I see that your total cuts are about almost 10%, and it's nice to be leading the charge and demonstrating what you can do and getting rid of FTEs. I'm curious, number one, for all the positions that the positions that you eliminated, those are positions that are currently not filled, so you're not getting rid of anybody. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that is really the guidance that we gave to everybody in the state, where we could do this by attrition and or through folks retiring or in those ways and then eliminate that position. We did so. Certainly that's what we did in the governor's office. Nobody has been fired or terminated in order to make these reductions.
Are there any vacancies now in the governor's staff?
So we had just at the beginning of the month 2 vacancies. So that would have been Tony Young's position that Senator Burns was visiting about, and we've actually filled that position. Mike McGrady will come on board December 19th with regard to that position. Then we had another position that would have been the position of Merritt Thomas, who was a policy advisor. So we are actually going to fill that with an executive assistant. I can't remember who asked the question, but that may be a position that we do have to reclassify downwards. We're still working through that. The executive assistant in that position will give direct support to Jeremiah Riemann as he works through the Endow Initiative. And so we felt that that was such a critical initiative to start at this point in the governor's administration that we wanted to have him have all the assistance that he needed for that. So our two vacancies we did just fill this month.
And just, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, if you, when you replace Tony's position, that person won't have the same pay scale that if it, as an analyst. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, the pay range, is, there'd be a slight variation, but the pay range for a policy advisor and the deputy chief of staff are really very similar. And especially when you're paying at the midpoint. So the person that we hired will make slightly less than Tony Young did because he both pays are within the pay scale, and neither pay are at the top of the pay scale. But that person will make slightly less than Tony Young did because this responsibility level is different. But it was appropriate to hire a policy advisor in that same position classification. One thing that we're somewhat concerned about and trying to at least at this point just again remind you that from when the governor started, we have less positions in the governor's office by 9.5 and less salary by $20,000 per month. When the governor started in this position, it was helpful to be able to have those positions as you figure out your administration, how you're going to work closely with the legislature and to get your, to manage, all of the aspects of a state government that you have to manage. We're a little concerned that as we've taken these cuts that we don't want to go so deep that the next governor doesn't have the same capacity that we had to get started, and of course already he won't by 9.5 positions. So these two positions are 9.5 after filling these two positions. 9.5 positions have been permanently cut by our recommendation out of the governor's office. So we just wanted to be careful with what we do with positions in the governor's office because we don't want to put the next governor in a position where he can't operate effectively.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? I think that's it, except for Homeland Security. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll invite Director Cameron come up. Guy Cameron, Homeland Security. And we're going to go back in the budget book.
Page 23.
Well, Homeland Security 23. Starts like on 23, but.
Yeah. 23.
Cameron.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the Joint Appropriations Committee, my name is Guy Cameron, the Director of the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security. Also with me today is Robin Roberts, who is our Chief Financial Officer for the agency, Deputy Director Mangeris, and Linda Myers is also with our financial staff, and Lynn Budd, who is in planning and critical infrastructure. Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity. I would like to take just a moment to recognize you, Senator Ross, for your service to the state of Wyoming.
Thank you.
And I wish you and your family the best of luck in all you do. I've had the chance to serve with you, and it was an honor and a pleasure. And when I think about this committee, there are a number of you that will leave this committee as well. And I know my time in the legislature, this is one of the most difficult, I believe, committees to serve upon, and a sacrifice to you personally and to your families because of the commitment where the rubber meets the road out of this very honorable committee. And I'd also like to recognize your new co-chairs, Senator Burns and Representative Nicholas. Congratulations to your new chairmanships. And for those outgoing, thanks for your service. For those coming on board, good luck to you. This is a committee that that eraser on the end of the pencil and that calculator determining at the end of 40 days or 20 where we sit. We know we'll get there. So with that, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, I start on page 23, which is the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security budget. Would like to just provide just an overview, maybe for old members, but older members, experienced members, but also for the new members coming on, just to give you a snapshot, an oversight of just our budget. Our budget is, as you can see on page 23, by the appropriation bill for 2017-2018, was just a little over $25 million. And then after our revised reductions, we currently sit today for discussion purposes at 24.9. Our total overall reductions are 517,536. And breaking that down in general fund is about 445,696. And federal funds that are a loss to our budget are 71,840. We are an agency that is approximately 86% federally funded, 10% general funded, and then we have some special funds of about 4%. Just of note to our agency numbers, our full-time count. It's reflected here, and it's worth noting. We were appropriated in the 2017-2018. Our count was at 25. And I'd like to just update the committee that our current agency numbers are 21. And worth noting that we'll talk about, as we get into each specific unit, where we address some personnel. But just to highlight that, we have one personnel cut, which is position 68. And then there are two positions that you will probably all recall, and I want to thank you for your efforts to school safety this last session with a program called Safe to Tell. With your input, we were able to bring on a few years ago a couple of staff to our agency with grant funding, and those two positions in last session were transferred from our budget into the Attorney General's budget to support the efforts for school safety. And those two positions are continuing to be funded today by our agency through a federal grant, which is Homeland Security, which is 100% federal. But those two staff members are no longer in our agency. So even though they were assigned to our agency for school safety, there were times during crisis in communities that you represent where we actually utilized all hands on deck when there is a crisis in the state to be able to support local communities in crisis, and those two positions certainly benefited the agency. In addition to that, then there was in the off season, if you will, from our budget, you have the 8% cuts, but in addition to that, there have been some discussions leadership from the governor's office, I think in consultation with the legislature and YDOT's budget, to strengthen the governance of WildLink. And so there was a position that was noted here a moment ago for a position that's no longer in our agency, right, which is an administrative assistant to the Public Safety Communications Commission. So that is in Unit 1111 that we'll talk about. So that is a brief overview for page 23.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if we can then proceed to Page 24, this would be, for the benefit of the committee, this is Unit 1101, and it will proceed for pages 24, 25, 26, and 27.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Guy, I'm just so I understand, on the budget reductions that you did, you say you're 86% funded federally and 10% by general fund. Are there matching requirements so that based upon the federal funds you get, that's why it went, you lost roughly a certain percentage of the general fund or of federal fund dollars because you're not making the match? And for that match, is it 85? Is it 10?
Yes. In that particular budget, 1101 is a 50-50 match.
50-50. Okay. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Appropriations Committee, to Unit 1101, we refer to this. This is a federal grant program. It's referenced as the Emergency Management Performance Grant. It is a 50-50 proposition where we match 50% with the federal government. For this particular grant, it's a preparedness grant, in short. It allows the agency to be able to prepare and plan, equip, and exercise in the event of all hazards that we prepare for as an agency. this is probably this budget alone, out of our 21 folks that we have on board, this composes 18 of our staff are 50% funded from this by federal government and then by the general fund. So to maybe more highlight, there is some narrative on page 25 that talks about some of the specifics, details of the cuts in parts of 1101, and I'll highlight that. And just to track part of that discussion on page 26, as you look to the breakdown in the 100 series, the 200 series, and the 900 series, the position that I talked about that is no longer in our agency, that we reduced by one, was position 68. This position was not filled, and that was in the 100 series. That broke down to about $144,000 for the biennium. In addition to that, there was a component of the 100 series, which was the health insurance holiday and premium reduction, and that was part of that 170 that's on page 26 in the 100 series. To balance out the 170 is due to the rate reduction. And that was for $26,003. In the 200 series, that is reflected in some narrative on page 25 and then in numbers on 26, services for about $30,000. That was a reduction in some travel for our agency, equipment, and supplies that we were able to recognize. And then in the 900 series over on page 27, under the 900 for your professional fees, we meet with the coordinators across the state, and the coordinators are a viable service that each county coordinator will appoint a local emergency homeland security advisor for the county and also for each tribe. And then Governor Meade, by statute, then takes those recommendations in consideration from the county commission, and then there is appointments made by the governor for 23 homeland security advisors at the local level and then for each of the tribes. We meet with those folks and have historically every quarter And why that's been important is it's an effort to get some face to face with those that we work with at the local level. You know, the last place you really like to address folks or constituents that we work with directly is during crisis. So it's important as an agency that we have over the years met quarterly with these folks across the state, and our efforts there are to find out situational awareness, be able to provide some training, some meaningful training. We do that. It's really about a day and a half that we have provided quarterly to be able to get together, talk about issues at the local level, address concerns, be able to get some valuable training in. And so we have had to cut back on that as a service. And so now we are meeting biannually. So that was one of the cuts in the 900 series. In addition to that, we also provide public safety messaging. And you've probably have seen our office with some messages from me and representing the agency for all hazards. If you haven't, it's probably because you saw me come up on your TV and you turned the channel real quickly or you turned it down so you didn't have to listen to me. But those are public safety announcements that we feel are vital to be able to make sure that we prepare as individuals, as local governments, in preparation for all hazards that could face us so that we're looking out for our neighbors.
Yes.
Going back to page 26, and I know this is something not for the not necessarily for the supplemental budget, but in the regular budget, number 240, intangibles, $400,000. Could you explain that, please?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, this is a category 240 intangibles. That is our data processing and computer equipment for the agency. Includes also our software licensing fees for the agency.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Are you contracted through ETS?
Mr. Chairman, we do work through ETS when we're purchasing our equipment, and then our license fees, our software fees. We also work with ETS as a approval process for those purchases.
Well, I guess I'm confused. Then why isn't it listed as data processing rather than intangibles?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it. That just the way our budget format is set up, that's the area that we plugged it into. It's a fixed asset, and so we plugged it in there.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you. So, Guy, I'm just trying to do the numbers here. It looks to me like on your general fund dollars, you basically reduced your budget by about 6.8%. Was that a fair characterization of the cuts that you implemented as a result of the governor's letter that was targeting 8% cuts throughout where possible?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, our calculations have it in excess of 8%. We have 8% plus then in the interim when we address the freeze to the position in 1111 from our agency that went as a transfer over to the Department of Transportation. As it reflected those current dollars within our budget, they were froze, and I believe the goal out of that transfer is to use a different source of funding for that position once it transferred into YDOT. So I think we're right, Representative Nicholas, close to about 20% if you take into that budget calculation.
And that position was, 22,000 roughly?
Mr. Chairman, yes. For the the position that went transferred to YDOT?
Correct.
Yeah, that is. Mr. Chairman, if I can do it by the just by part of the numbers that's reflected on page 23, the 1111 public safety communications, and that was 197,917. That actual reflection for that position is 176,104. In 100 series, and then the balance to the 197 is in 200, 400, 900 series, and that entire amount at that point in time with discussions with YDOT was frozen, and then that position, as I understand, is reevaluated within YDOT. And then we captured that as a savings to the budget for purposes of reflection on our budget.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the total unit then reflection for 1101 as far as a savings that are computed are 200 for 1101, 249,285, and again that breakout is 177,445 in general fund, and then the because it's a grant, federal grant matching program, the lost federal funds are 71,840. If I can go to 1102, Mr. Chairman, 1102 is recognized on page 28. This is what is referred to as community assistance program. The reduction in this is $669 of general fund, which is the health insurance holiday and premium deduction. I might just note for the agency, the total health insurance reduction for the agency is $26,672 between 1101 and with the combination of 1102. So that is the only reflection and reduction in 1102, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
1110, and 1110 is picked up on page 31.
Mr. Chair, just before we go on, is that those federal funds, are there any type of matching requirements for those funds?
Mr. Chairman, for health insurance?
No, I'm going to your community assistance program and the funds that you, the federal funds you use for that.
Yes. Yes, this is a 75-25.
Thank you.
As we go to 1110, 1110, Mr. Chairman, is our state support fund. And the state support fund is a critical component of our budget for the response to communities in crisis, and it is supported by regional emergency response teams. Those regional emergency response teams, there are eight across the state. Their main function is in a hazmat world. It also has response. This budget also helps support seven bomb teams across the state that also have canine capability. So how that works is when there is a request for service that comes into our duty officer, which is a 24/7 number for service for a hazmat spill or for a law enforcement issue relative to a bomb threat. these teams deploy, and we are able to use this account to be able to support those responding agencies that are made up of your local community that makes up both of these eight regional response teams, and then law enforcement officers at the local level that fill obligations for seven bomb teams around the state. So this particular fund is one that through the last few years where we've had to tighten our belt, this fund at one point was about $500,000 a biennium, and now it is significantly less than that to date. And we use this account for those folks that I've talked about. In addition, this is also an account that we utilize for the agency for response of our staff. We are limited by our federal grants for response purposes. So this is an important program for our staff. And then we also utilize it for the National Guard in many cases for response, that we can go to this account and deploy the Guard at the governor's approval to be able to be in communities where we have incidents that occur. What we have recognized in this cut is in the 200 series is some travel, repair and maintenance, and then also in the 600 series, this is grants and payments, and those are for those payments that we are. For those RERT teams, those regional emergency response teams, we provide that reimbursement back to them for their services through the 600 series. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the total for that $69,665 that is recognized in 1110, broke out in 200 and 600.
Question. Mr. Burns.
Two questions. In the narrative on page 31, you say this is an 11% reduction in overall cost for several series, 200, 400, and 900, yet I don't see a reduction in 900. Am I missing something?
There should be recognized a cut in two areas, 2 and 600 series, for a total of 69,665.
It was an error.
Yeah, we don't have
anything. No, that's not it. Okay. Is it just a mistake in the narrative?
It's just
or
two
am
and
I,
six.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I believe that narrative is associated with what started with the penny plan and the reductions that took place with the legislature last session and has moved forward through today. So I think that's what they're saying, is that we've experienced this level of cut in these areas since that budget was cut.
Okay. One other question, Mr. Chairman. This one's a little more parochial. It says here, both in the Part A narrative above and here, that that this money is used primarily to respond to various incidents that range from accidents on I-25 and I-80 to regional emergency response teams and so forth. What happens if there's a hazardous spill or whatever on I-90?
Mr. Chairman, we will deploy the regional emergency response team in that area. So we will cover statewide between all of our eight regional response teams, whether it's to an interstate, all interstates, or secondaries. Where there's a need, where there's that spill, the capability is there statewide to address that. So
okay, I was wondering if there's a reason you left it out.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's probably just an examples, but certainly we cover I-90, Senator Burns.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, to the last of
Mr. Chairman, can I,
yes.
Let me ask you a question. When we look back at your large budget in Unit 1101, and what do we have, 19 people in there? I mean, aren't they able to coordinate these response teams with your personnel that's there? What's the extra funds for? I mean, it's just to give back to the counties to cover their expense or to the local municipalities?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, Representative Greer. Those funds, very meaningful for volunteers that are working on these teams at the local level, whether they're on an RERT team, they're made up of they're made up of many disciplines, but they serve 8 of those teams across the state, and then the bomb teams are coming from a law enforcement presence, and we're reimbursing them for, and also covering their liability when they go out the door representing the state.
How many incidences do we have? Do you guys track those? How many hits or what? I mean, what are we seeing in terms of the usage?
Mr. Chairman,
what is your burn rate? I mean, I think that's.
Yeah, out of 1110, I can tell you what we experience over since 2010, I believe, about 152,000 a year is what our experience is out of 1110. So roughly about 305,000. Now, this is unpredictable business because we don't know when there will be an incident that pushes either these teams out the door or what pushes maybe other assets from the state, such as the National Guard, out the door. But that, what we looked at was averages, Representative Greer. That's what I could share with you. About 152,000 a year is what we're currently using out of 1110. What I can follow up for you in the committee is a breakdown for the response out of 1110.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that'd be useful to know how much that's utilized, and then, because what I see is coordinating these teams is important. I don't disagree with that, but I'm just curious if we need the slush fund to reimburse back when we're already paying for the people to be trained and ready to react. I won't be doing the markup, but that's my commentary.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the last unit in our presentation is to Unit 1111, and that's reflected on page 33. That's the Public Safety Communications Commission. And maybe just a little history. This position came to the Office of Homeland Security just a few short years ago, I believe right after ETS was stood up and in place. There was some jockeying of positions. At the time, we did have some interoperability grants that have since closed, this position had some play in those grants, being able to manage that. Those grants have closed here a few years ago. And, again, this was discussions that took place beyond our original presentation for budget, beyond our 8%, where we were able to work with the Department of Transportation in their efforts that I know, I believe there's legislation underway to strengthen the efforts of governance within the Public Safety Communications Commission. Positions and as a component of that, the governance or the administrative component to that was this position that we deliberately froze here here in the last few months for that $197,000. And then I can just share with you what I understood. Look for a different source of funding that would be available within YDOT that recognizes this savings here and look for a different source to fund that position and strengthen the governance for WildLink and the overall efforts with the Public Safety Communications Commission. So that is finalizes that recognition of those funds that were in our budget and now transferred. And that position currently is that has happened. That transfer has taken place, and this position is now over at YDOT.
Okay. Any further questions? Hearing none. Thank you, Director Cameron and staff, and we appreciate all that you do. And thank you for your kind comments.
Mr. Chairman, good luck to all of you during this session. Thanks for allowing me the time to be before you today.
Thank you. Okay, the next budget is the governor's residence. Director, Chief of Staff.
Mr. Chairman, Kerry Gray, Chief of Staff for Governor Meade, here on behalf of the First Lady to present the governor's residence. So it's on page, I actually think mine's misnumbered. It's agency number 63. And so on page 3 of agency 63, is reflected the reductions from the governor's from the residents. So the residents had a position in which the individual in that position helped with housekeeping, helped with organizing events. She was kind of a jack of all trades, and she retired. And so the residents went ahead and reduced that position. And a portion of the salary associated with that position. In fact, without that position, there is a need to contract out of their 900 series for some cleaning and assistance with the functions that are functions for this of state for the residents. So you'll see that they are asking for a reduction of $62,841 in one position, but they're also asking that $74,000 be transferred from their 100 series to their 900 series to allow them to do contracted service for some of the cleaning and work that was done by that position, and to continue what they do with the residents.
Okay. Yes.
I'm just curious, what are the other two positions?
At the residence, there's the executive chef, and there's sort of a residence manager. So that would be Sue Akey, who you see out there. She helps the First Lady with her travel. She does the general day-to-day running of the residence. She does a lot of the kind of administrative work that goes on. And then, of course, Becky Beavers does all of the meals and the catering and everything that's done.
So in addition to the residence, she's also kind of a major domo to the First Lady.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, if you just allow me, I would first off, if we could go back to the governor's budget for just 1 second. There was a question about vacant positions in the governor's budget, and I said that we had no vacant positions. It filled them all. In fact, there is one vacant position. It's an AWAC position that was most recently filled by a young lady named Emily Madden. That position, when we have a special project or something of the nature of that goes on, how we've used the position is to fill it and have somebody come in. We hire them as a full-time person. Sometimes a project is several years in duration. Sometimes it's a matter of months. We haven't filled that position since Emily left, and so that remains vacant in the governor's office. So that's a correction to what I'd said earlier in budget on uniform laws. There was $1,009 in a Section 323 transfer, and I had said that I thought that money had come out of the Department of Corrections. In fact, it came out of the Policy Division of the Governor's Office. And then when Director Cameron was testifying, there was some question about the amount of his cuts from Representative Nicholas. So I would tell you that the governor, the process that we used, had asked all agencies to bring forward an 8% cut. And in coming forward with their 8% cut, they were not allowed to use the enterprise reductions as part of their 8%. They had to come up with 8% in addition to the enterprise reductions. Then we met individually with every agency, and we went over their cuts as they proposed them, what the impact of those cuts would be on the agency, the services that they deliver, and the state. And we adjusted from there. So some agencies made an 8% cut or greater. Some made less than an 8% cut. I think in his remarks to you, the governor mentioned the Public Defender's Office. That was an agency that we felt could take no cuts without an entire loss of service in an effective way. So we came in then with the enterprise cuts and made up the difference for what we thought that we had to have to balance the state's budget through those enterprise cuts, which you will see throughout agencies. So, but the overall reduction of the state general fund budget on the executive side was 11%. So you'll see some agencies slightly less, some slightly more. When they were given the charge, they were not using the enterprise cuts to come up with an 8% cut, and then we adjusted back after meetings with agencies. So I just wanted you to kind of know our process.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions? That Senator Wasserberger.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And question for Mrs. Gray. Could you supply to us the number of positions that you're down and how much the salaries have lowered so that we can get that to our – there's a lot of questions in Campbell County about the governor's office and salaries and things like that. And if we had that information from your office, we could use that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you. Gary Joe, appreciate your presentation.
Yeah, thank you
being
all.
Here, your patience as we work through. I think at this point in time, with our schedule, we're a little bit ahead of time, and we're scheduled to hear from the Supreme Court at 1. And so I think we'll take our afternoon break at this point in time for lunch. Yes, Don.
Mr. Chairman, just two administrative housekeeping items that came up this morning that I wanted to bring your attention to. Handout number 38 and handout number 46, they should be in your inbox. Handout number 38 is also on the calendar under the governor's presentation, so the 9 a.m. item on the SharePoint calendar. And handout number 46 is also on there. The first one is each agency's vacant positions as of December. So that's where the AWAC position that the governor's office referred to, it can be identified. Mm-hmm. In addition, the governor's office, for example, cut or deleted four positions in their agency. They're listed by number in the narrative, but the attachment or handout number 46 provides the salary, benefits, and title of that position, so you can determine whether it was a front office staff or a policy staff or an engineer or the like. Those two handouts might be useful for all agencies going forward.
Okay. Thank you, Don. All right. We'll stand in recess until 1 o'clock for presentation from Supreme Court.